All right, everyone, I think we'll just start now. Hello. Welcome to day, whatever it is, Wednesday anyway, of the International Council on English Braille, Mary Schnackenberg again. Welcome also to any of the people who are listening in internet land, reminding us that we're on live web streaming, and we also have our Twitter account, and Hanifa's in the corner. Every time the power goes off, when Hanif's computer reboots, the CD drive starts up with the South African National Anthem. So that's a good thing. So we're getting good practice, at least with the opening of it. So there is a chance there will be people doing sound recordings of the proceedings, and there's also a possibility of photographs. And speaking of photographs, the first photographs are up on the streaming website, ICEB2012.net. So those of you who want to have a look at those photos, they're up there. Now, Kathy is up here to greet us this morning, Kathy Donaldson. So can I ask Kathy to give us any house rules and other pieces of information for the day, please?
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I'm glad to see you still all bright and breezy. When you visit with the Australians, you get to bed very late at night. I thought it was only early mornings that I had to get up, but it's becoming late nights now, so how do I deal with both? However, I'm still around. Don't get rid of the tiger so easily. There are not many rules and announcements this morning. Firstly, it's very, very important for all of you to be out of this room by 4:15 this afternoon so that they can tidy it up and get it ready for the dinner. As you all know, the dinner is 6:30. We have got a seating plan. We have arranged that people will tell you where you have to sit. And I've tried to mix people so that you can get to know each other even better. I'm sure that everybody knows everybody by now, but it's always nice to mingle and to meet other people. As far as the shopping is concerned, please tell us if you need anything. Just ask us if there's anything else. At the moment, there's nothing. We have done the departure plan and everything is sorted out there, so we've done that all. I'd like to wish you all a wonderful day once again. I'm glad to see that the sun is still shining, and I need a new cane because my cane's elastic decided to give in last night. Don't worry, I'll get one. So have a pleasant meeting today and enjoy yourselves, and remember that we are around if you need us for anything. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Kathy. We've had such wonderful support from you and your team since we've been here. It's been absolutely amazing. So thanks very much. And just to reinforce, when we clear from the room, that means taking all our belongings with us, so that the room can be taken down and rearranged for dinner tonight, and that will be by 4:15. Now, I've got a couple of other things. I think we still have some brochures about the Dorothy Duncan Library in Zimbabwe. Do we still have any of the UEB training and implementation materials, paper from or report from Jean? I think we might have a few of those.
Yes, print copies for that.
Print copies. We've got assembly attendees list.
Still some of those.
There's
yes.
still some of those. There's the small Braille production guidelines.
Yes.
So there's still some print up here. Hopefully we will be able to ensure that you get the print that you haven't collected before the end of the sessions.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. So it would be a good idea if you are missing any of those items of print to collect them today, because it may not re-find itself tomorrow morning. Now, I just want to double check. I know Bill Jolly's in the room. Betty Noble? No. Okay, never mind. I was going to ask a question, but that's fine. So we'll skip that till later. Just to remind us, please, if you want the call from the top table, please would you mind raising your hand and keeping it up? Raise your hand really high and keep it up so that we can keep track of people requesting the opportunity to speak. Now, this morning is about refreshable braille, electronic braille displays, and how they interface with various things. The first thing we're going to do is invite Christo to give his refreshable braille committee report. Then we'll move on to Pete Osborne's paper about the proposal from the RNIB. Morning tea. After morning tea, we have two more papers. The first one's from Judy about connecting refreshable braille displays to iOS devices. And unlike somebody on a listserv I saw once, that's not spelled E-Y-E, sorry. Then after that, we will have Leona Holloway talking about a braille project that is running at Vision Australia. So that takes us to lunchtime. After lunch, Phyllis Landon's report of the Code Maintenance Committee, and then the meeting of the Code Maintenance Committee. The room will close at 4:15, and then we'll be ready for dinner tonight. You will note on the program that tonight's dinner, there will be presentations to the three people who are retiring from the executive, Darlene Bogart, Bill Poole, and Fred Schroeder. All right, Christo, you're on.
Thank you, Mary. Morning, everybody. I'm not going to spend much time talking about the report. I rather want us to spend some time in discussing where we want to go with this committee. Some of you here will recall that during the midterm executive meeting in Birmingham 2 years ago, I was requested to take over the chair of this committee. And after that, it took a bit of time to get the membership sorted out. All the member countries, except for Nigeria, are represented on the committee. Nigeria preferred not to be part of it, as refreshable braille devices have a low priority in that country, most likely as a result of what is going to be a recurring theme, the prohibitive cost of these devices. We did get the membership sorted out. We started a conversation about what was to be our initial task, and that was to deliberate on how to set about gathering user requirements for refreshable braille devices. And some interesting thoughts were exchanged, but then it appeared that there were a number of similar initiatives taking place at the same time in other parts of the world. And we have heard some of them already, and we will hear more of them. But we found ourselves in a position that we really did not know what our task should be, because it looked like wheels were being developed separately from each other in different areas of the world. Pete supplied us with some interesting information. He let us have a document from the RNIB, which was a report on refreshable braille device usage, which contained very valuable information. The sample tested was fairly small, only 12 people. But it still contained much interesting information. And he later let us have another document on digital talking books, user requirements for digital talking books. But by then, it was almost time to come here, so there hasn't been further discussion about that. in Leipzig, there were some papers presented, and we saw all sorts of refreshable Braille displays, very impressive ones, but again prohibitively expensive. I think the ultimate in refreshable Braille devices was the Hyper Braille, which is a full page thing. So with your hands you could feel the structure of a page, of a document, the layout of a spreadsheet. That's wonderful, but at a price of 45,000 euros, I believe not even institutions would be able to buy that. So the recurring theme is the cost of these devices. We often these days hear people advocating for reducing paper Braille and moving to electronic Braille. But I'm afraid in countries like South Africa, like Nigeria, like probably all countries in Africa, that is just not on for a very long time, until such time comes when average people can afford these devices. Now, that brings me then to the question, where do we go with this committee, seeing that there are initiatives and that work has already been published about user requirements? I don't know what is required of this committee. I think we need such a committee to at least stay abreast of developments, making inputs where necessary. For one thing, there are some of these refreshable Braille devices which have implemented the UEB, but in some cases my own experience of them, it is quite a shocking implementation. It is because this company decided to write their own translator rather than using something like Duxbury, which provides excellent UEB. I can see us having some role in trying to ensure that at least quality Braille is produced by these devices. But Mary, I think we should discuss how this committee should function. I think we felt a little bit lost, not knowing what to do because of all the similar initiatives. That is as far as I will go with the report, and I suggest then that we discuss the future of the committee.
Thank you very much, Christo, for starting off the conversation and for presenting your report. I'm very happy to take any comments. I certainly understand and respect the fact that we do have to monitor the quality of the translation tables for not just Unified English Braille, but other languages that might be within our purview. For example, I would imagine that, Christo, your team would be looking after South African languages and making sure that those were correctly translating in any of the electronic Braille devices that were not using Duxbury tables. So can I seek comment now from the floor about Christo's report and about future tasks for the Refreshable Braille Committee? We don't see any hands at this stage.
Canada.
Right.
Hello, it's Betty Noble here. I'm wondering about efficient use of Braille displays and things like tutorials about how to use them effectively. I think, you know, if you get a refreshable Braille display, if you're fortunate enough to get one, often you know, you're just sort of left floundering on your own and not knowing how it can be used most effectively and in combination with speech or without speech entirely. And, you know, perhaps one of the things the committee could look into would be resources for learning how to use a refreshable braille display.
Very sensible. I'm just thinking that the display that I have came with a few instructions about the keys to press. So, next comment, we have Leona from Australia.
Hi. When we were talking about monitoring the translation within braille displays, that also made me think of monitoring the translation to UEB in other free translation softwares. So, for example, in web services that will translate to braille, and also things like LibLui, which are currently not translating to UEB, but may be used by people mistakenly thinking that they do.
Very good point. Tell me about that particular website, LibLui.
LibLui is an open source free translation software, and it's often used by developers who are creating things like a online web translation service, or they may also use it for their refreshable braille displays because it's free and open source. But it has currently got UEB tables within it that we used when we were developing the UEB code, so they're old translation tables that are not correct. So it looks like it translates to UEB, but it doesn't do it properly.
All right, do we have any other hands?
UK.
Mike Townsend, UK. LibLui is open source. By its nature, then, we can contribute, or anyone can contribute, to the tables. So if the UEB tables are out of date, that's our responsibility. So we need to have experts. We've got one at Torch Trust. I'll talk to him about making sure that LibLui is UEB up to date, because we're going to need translators in the UK. We're very grateful to Joe for Duxbury, but it's good to have an open source version as well, so I would encourage people to contribute to that. That's it.
Thanks very much, Mike. Any more comments? US? Judy?
The blood in my hand.
Thank you. Judy Dixon from the United States. I just wanted to point out that when we're talking about refreshable braille displays, we're really talking about a wide range of devices and scenarios, apples, oranges, and kumquats. And they can be all-in-one devices that include braille translation, such as braille notes and braille sensors and devices like that, that come with their own software, they have come with their own operating system, usually some flavor of Windows CE, but it's buried so deep that the user doesn't have much access to it. And they may or may not work well with UEB or other braille translation, because some of them use proprietary translation systems. But a refreshable braille can also be a device that knows very little, except possibly how to display characters, but actually connects to a PC or other device where most of the smarts are. And it's the screen reader that's providing the braille translation. JAWS, Window Eyes, whatever else is used around the world. So I think we need to, and refreshable braille can also be other things. In Paris, I saw an ATM that had a refreshable braille display built into it. It was amazing. So refreshable braille is simply braille that is produced by pins that raise and lower and it is not embossed on paper. And that's a great wide world of devices and possibilities. And I think it's useful for us to define what we're talking about when we talk about refreshable Braille, and what we then want to say about it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Judy. Pete Osborne?
I completely agree with Judy, of course. I think, how would you dare not? I think that there is an extremely wide range of devices, and I think what I would add to that is there are probably scenarios and devices that have not yet even been conceived. And Judy touched on one of those that she's seen, which is a Braille refreshable Braille device on a cash machine, an ATM. I'm aware of somebody that's working on an accessible ticketing machine. Which would also include a Braille display. So I think people are beginning to think quite laterally about this. Coming back to the committee, I think, and this is where I upset technology developers everywhere, but I think sometimes there's a risk that technology can be developed without clearly understanding how we might use it. And occasionally that dart hits the mark and we get a beautiful product that we all love and we all want to have. But occasionally, and probably more regularly, I would suggest, technology is developed that really doesn't match what we might want as users of that technology. So I think there's a role for the committee in establishing requirements and really looking at the use cases for technology. So a user-focused approach rather than a technology design-focused approach. And hopefully, through that committee, if we can actually get some really clear statements about what we want out of the technology that needs to be developed, then I think we might stand a better chance of getting the technology we all need in the future. That would be my focus.
Thank you, Pete. Any more comments? Canada.
Hi, it's Jen. Sorry, I was debating whether I wanted to say this or not, but one of my frustrations is that when I'm using a Braille display, and this is particularly the setup that I have at work, I cannot use my Braille display without the speech software. I mean, I personally can, but it's not possible because of the way the technology works together, and I would like to have that option, particularly because this particular speech software, which shall remain nameless, that I use at work, often crashes, and when it crashes, I have no more Braille display. And if they did not work together, if they could be independent of each other, then at least when this unnamed speech software, with which I'm working, crashes, at least I would still have Braille. And so that's something that I know it's not sort of an overarching issue, but I would like, as the user, to be able to choose, you know, I want to use a Braille display, but I don't want to have to also, you know, use the speech software as well. So just something that I wanted to mention.
Sometimes, even if the speech is turned off, there is some unnamed software out there that is going to crash anyway, Braille or not. So it is one of the challenges that some of the software in the system is not that stable. And that's unfortunate. Any more comments? All right. So this leaves the challenge for the incoming executive to acknowledge two things. Firstly, that we have an ongoing need for the Refreshable Braille Committee. And secondly, what should that charge or set of instructions to the committee look like? And the executive will revisit the committee and the actual specific things it wants the committee to do, and then progress from there. So thank you very much, Christo, for your report this morning. Pete, I think we can move, even though normally I say, well, we'll only start the paper at the exact time, I think it's reasonable for us to move into your paper and just ask the question, Pete, do you want to deliver it from where you are, or would you like to come up to the front? It doesn't matter which. Okay. Pete has told the room, but not the world, that he's going to stay at his table. Now, before you start, there's a detail that I would like to check, please, Pete. Just making sure that the different people on the incoming executive are A, in the room, and B, have access to email in the hotel. Betty, do you have access to email in the hotel?
Yes, I do. We were having a problem.
Okay, you have access to it. Okay. Yes. Phyllis, you have access?
No.
Fine. That sorts that problem out. Okay. Right. We don't have to go any further. Fine. Thank you very much. Pete, your turn.
Okay. We're just playing with microphones. Thank you very much. I'm going to try and I want to get through the paper reasonably quickly because I'd much rather have discussion about the project. So be good to have questions about that. As Judy's already said, there's a huge variety of Braille display devices. We've got some hiss on the microphone.
Yeah, that, can we swap the mic?
Can we swap?
One of those is a lot of volume.
Right, is that better? Yeah, that's better. Yeah. I was just conscious that it might not transmit very well as not people not being able to hear. For at least the past 30 years, Braille displays of various shapes and sizes have been manufactured using the same technology. So although the nature of the display might have changed, the way in which the pins in the Braille display work is predominantly the same. Pins arranged in 6 or 8 dot cells are electronically raised and lowered, forming Braille characters. Displays are usually single line and range from 12 to 84 cells. People will probably dispute that in the room because there are some differences. And as we've already heard, there are some larger displays. I also saw the Hyper Braille terminal, and you know, at close to €50,000. Very interesting concept, but I don't see myself buying one. Sorry, guys, for that. But it's, you know, it proves it can be done. You know, it proves you can develop something like that, and you can actually make the cells work together. But in terms of a product, you know, that is a serious challenge, I think. As Judy said, displays have been integrated into note takers and into various forms of computing. And through the work that we're doing at the moment, we're aware of people trying to do all sorts of things with Braille displays, integrating one into a phone, and actually having the phone within the note taker is also, you know, that's being done. The ATM, which Judy mentioned, there's a ticketing kiosk, and I most recently saw an example of a Braille display that was actually working in a complete karaoke system, which seemed quite an interesting idea. In fact, almost 4 years ago to the day, I was live on Japanese television with a colleague called John Godber singing from a karaoke machine, using a Braille display, which was a really interesting experience. I needed at least half a bottle of wine before that happened. And after as well. Touch cursors are included in displays to enable us to find, you know, where the text that we want to find. Most Braille displays contain software which will translate into Braille, but as Judy's also pointed out, the screen reader can control the Braille display as well, and all sorts of third-party software has an influence on how that Braille display might work. So this all sounds kind of perfect. So, you know, what's the problem with all this? We've got devices that are very robust. We've got, you know, devices that have a good track record. So, you know, why are we bothering about this? What's the problem? With prices for the most basic device, starting from around £1,500, and I'll leave you to convert that to your own currencies, refreshable Braille displays are only available to a privileged few who might have access to government funding who might be extremely rich. So I think, you know, most people don't have access to a Braille display. I think probably the highest density of Braille displays I've ever seen is in Norway, where everybody seems to have about four. But, you know, apart from that, most people don't actually have the access to them in the way we might like. Many people may have already stopped reading this paper or even listening to me. That might be for other reasons. Fearing that once again it covers a topic that just isn't relevant to them. You know, it's just a technology that's not affordable and available to people. And I think Christa has already mentioned that, you know, here in South Africa, where, and indeed in many countries where resources may not be available, this is just a mirage. You know, Braille displays and access to refreshable Braille is a mirage. The current estimated market for Braille cells, and I stress cells, not Braille displays, is 300,000 cells a year. This might appear to be a very significant number. However, we need to keep in mind that it was reported that Amazon sold 1 million Kindle devices in the first 10 days of December 2012. So 2011, that should be. Sorry, that's a misprint. So it should be 2011. Yeah. They actually project that next month they will sell 1.6 million Kindle devices across the world. They do produce their projections and publish them, so it's interesting. We've got to cooperate globally to address business models, which might increase the volume, and therefore increase availability of devices. I really do struggle to accept that brilliant it is, the technology of 30 years ago is still relevant and useful to today. It still has relevance today. I can't accept that there shouldn't be substantial change in that technology. If you look at most laws of computing, you know, they will say that the speed, you know, of computing increases, you know, exponentially, Moore's law, for those that know about this stuff. The way in which technology has changed over even the past, you know, 4 or 5 years is absolutely phenomenal. I think there is an unhealthy stagnation in the development of refreshable Braille display technology. It may be the case that Braille displays are actually too reliable. I've got one that's, you know, that's 8 years old, and I challenge you to think of any technology that will last that long. You know, most technology is dead. You know, with a much shorter time. As an aside, my employer seems to think that my laptop will last 5 years. I can assure them it won't. During its life, you know, the cells will refresh many millions of times, and that really is, you know, a phenomenal level of reliability. But is it a level of reliability that we should expect? The challenge, I think. As we've already heard, refreshable Braille has the challenge to open up access to reading for many more people and access to information. Recently published research in the UK shows that a paltry 7% of books are available in various formats, and that assumes you can read quite a lot of different formats. But actually, if you add in electronic books, that jumps to 54% of the top 1,000 books being available to us. Now, I want to read that 54% in Braille. I want the choice to read that 54% in Braille. But I'm only going to get that choice if I've actually got access to an affordable device. I think the growth in e-books is you know, particularly in the UK and US, and I think it's beginning to impact other countries as well, is absolutely phenomenal. And certainly as a skill set now, I'm finding I need to develop search and retrieval skills as much as anything else, because I can read more of what I want to read rather than what's available to me or what I'm told to read. And actually developing those skills to go out there and search for what I want in the millions of books that are potentially now available to me, it's a new skill set that I'm having to develop. And that takes a little bit of time. Those who read with their fingers by touch must not be left behind, in my view. There's a real danger this might happen. I think as we talk about, you know, social networking, the growth of professional networks, you know, the growth of access to e-books, newspapers, the internet, etc., as electronic information becomes increasingly important to people, we must make sure that people can access that information by touch, and that means a revolution. And I do mean revolution this time, as opposed to resolution, in Braille display technologies. it's indisputable that Braille is absolutely essential for deafblind people. And I think many deafblind people will say that they now rely on refreshable Braille as their primary means of communication, particularly accessing information on the net. But our definition should also take into account those people who lose their hearing as they become older, and that's going to happen to quite a lot of us. So, you know, I think the use of Braille as your hearing changes, particularly if you've also got sight loss, I think is something that we don't properly understand yet. And the role of refreshable Braille in making sure that people can access information is important. In my brave new world, you could argue that there's no need to transcribe anything into Braille, because, you know, this wonderful world of refreshable Braille and all of the wonders that it might bring will do it all for us. But I don't really believe that. I think the transcription challenge will change. You know, it's still going to be there. I mean, it would be non-existent if all of the information that was available in electronic format, you know, was equated to that that's available in print, but that's not the case. So I think the transcription challenge will still be there for a very, very long time to come, but it will change. Sensitive formatting is very important, and you know, actually, with a lot of information, it's very difficult to achieve that without human intervention. So I'm not writing transcribers off. In short, in my view, if we fail to change the business model, I think we there's a danger that we deliver at least a serious, if not a mortal injury to Braille. I think people in education will find it more difficult to justify using Braille in the context of education unless they can access affordable, refreshable Braille devices. I also believe that people in developing countries, you know, at the moment, the models do people a huge disservice, because it's impossible for people to access those devices due to the very high cost of those devices. So I think this is one of the most important areas of development as far as Braille is concerned. So moving to tell you a little bit about this global project for change. This is a project that's being agreed by the DAISY Consortium, the Digital Accessible Information Systems Consortium, which actually started its life developing standards for digital talking books, but which now leads our efforts concerning accessible publishing for all. It's been the maintenance agency for the EPUB format, which is one of the principal electronic book formats. I think some of the technologies and standards it's developed are like many technologies and standards developed for people with a visual impairment, they've actually found their way into mainstream publishing. So the constructs around structure in e-books very much came from the DAISY Consortium. It's how we've been structuring e-books for a very long time. So the consortium has agreed to initiate a project, again, picking up a point that Judy made, we need to decide what we're talking about. You know, refreshable Braille can mean absolutely anything, can mean any form of access. I absolutely agree with that. And this project is predominantly talking about a reading device. It's talking about developing a project that actually enables an affordable Braille display that actually will link to e-book readers, which are generally not wildly overpriced at the moment because of the volume, which will actually enable you to read. And one of the things I'm interested in is whether you think we've got the scope of that project right, because we're in a consultation phase at the moment. There are in excess of 40 projects in the sphere of refreshable Braille development, currently developing, trying to develop technologies and techniques for improved refreshable Braille displays. This just isn't sustainable in a market the size that we're talking about. That number of development projects, actually what that equates to is a development pot, if you like, a funding pot spread across projects, some of which are really quite interesting and innovative, but some are entirely speculative. And, you know, it's difficult to see how you can justify such a large number of projects, and I think that's something that we have to address and try to refine as a community. The project is scientifically assessing all of those projects. We've employed an engineering firm to do that, to look at the engineering credentials of these projects to see if we can actually work out how to prioritise the project into a smaller number. The aim is to come up with a shortlist and then to develop an investment conference involving key players from our sector with an aim of investing in the development of a low-cost refreshable braille display. The outcome of the project is very clear. The project is designed to shortlist refreshable braille technologies which could deliver a braille display of around $250 cost. So we're trying to absolutely, radically, exponentially, whatever word you want to use, change the cost basis on which reading devices might be available to people. And I have to say, having seen some of the technologies and some of the approaches, I do believe this is possible. I think it will require a lot of effort, but I do believe it's absolutely possible. As a prerequisite to all of this, it's absolutely crucial that the design principles are sound and that the characteristics of the reading display we want to create are clearly understood. And I think it'd be interesting to have some observations on the key things that you think are relevant to a braille display, a reading display. And if we don't get to that point here, my email address is in the paper, and please feel free to contact me about that. For those that are listening on the net, it's Pete, P-E-T-E, dot Osborne, O-S-B-O-R-N-E, at rnib.org.uk. I'm going to reiterate this. The scope of the project does not extend to a comprehensive range of refreshable braille devices. In short, we're not trying to undermine the entire structure of the market that we all know at the moment. That could be an unhelpful move because, you know, we all rely on lots of devices that we use and they are very good at what they do. We're particularly trying to address a need, which is the need to link to relatively cheap e-book devices so that those of us who want to read by touch have an opportunity to do so. And I think that's all I should say on the paper, and I'm happy to take any comments.
Thank you very much, Pete. You put out the challenge to us to suggest the things that we value in an electronic braille display. So I certainly open the floor for any comment and questions, and let's see what happens. Christo.
Thank you, Mary. Just a question to Pete. Would screen reading be excluded, or would that be seen as part of such a reading device?
I think the view that's being taken at the moment is that the device should be relatively dumb, in a sense. So it will link to other devices. So I think the assumption is that the main focus of the device will be, you know, the creation of the braille. And I think the way in which it's being discussed at the moment, there'll be relatively little software in the device. Having said that, though, I think you've touched on an area that the project hasn't yet fully understood, which is how the device properly interfaces to reading devices and how that really works. If you've got something like a Kindle, for example, which some of you may have seen, then that's also a relatively dumb device. Sorry, Amazon, but it is. You've got some software in there, but the prospect of something like a Kindle actually handling braille translation, you know, maybe. I mean, other devices do, but, you know, it's an area that the project needs to understand more. So at the moment, the braille display is conceived as a relatively dumb device, but I can see that changing to some extent.
Jen?
Hi, I just wanted to say you were sort of asking, you know, asking us what we thought we would want in a device, and as I'm sitting here listening to you, I'm thinking, you know, if I could get something like a Kindle or a Kobo or whatever and buy books and then have a braille display that I could connect and read it, I would be really excited, because that's as we all know, that's definitely a gap in what's available to us, and it would just make so many more books available, which is what I'm always looking for. So that's just my input. I would definitely pay the $250.
Pete?
I'm listening.
I thought you were looking.
No.
Okay. I think Bill Paul there.
Yes, Pete. That was a very interesting paper, and I may have missed something because I was going to ask you what price you were aiming to sell these devices at. What range of prices are you looking to for selling these devices?
The project leader, Kevin Carey from RNIB, has gone on record as saying that the price should be around $250.
But is that based on adequate technical knowledge of the possibilities, or is it just a specifying a name to encourage you to work towards it? I mean, does he have a realistic idea of what has to be achieved to get the price down that low?
Yes, he does have a realistic idea, and he's seen some of the technologies. So he does believe this to be possible, and I share that belief.
Right, so you would support $250 as well?
I would support that.
Okay.
So, Mike Townsend, I've also seen some of these technologies, and I think this is a very exciting project. It could be a step change in refreshable Braille for us all. The unfortunate nature of these technologies that I've seen is that they've remained within the universities. They've not escaped. So this project is a means to get them out there and get them into our hands. So I think it's really exciting. And I hope, I've seen Peter's other paper. I don't know, did you create it, Peter, the sort of guidelines for specification?
This is the guidelines for the project. No, I didn't create that. I'm not laying claims to that one.
Okay.
It has been circulated to some groups. I think the Refreshable Braille group have seen it as well. They are the basic guidelines for the project, yes.
So they are good, and I think probably those that are interested should have a look at that paper as well. But fundamentally, what we want is a device that we can actually have in our hands that has some navigation to it, as well as just displaying, so that when I've got the device in my hand, I can go backwards and forwards. I'm not sure about searching capabilities, because that requires an extra degree of intelligence, but that would be useful. I would have thought automatic reading, so the braille comes automatically to your fingers, is a vital one as well. So I think we're going to have to look not just at a dumb braille display, but some kind of way of interfacing that display to whatever dumb thing it's got to interface to. And so I think that should be put into the project. Open Braille is one of the standards that's already being developed. I don't know if that's one that we could use to build on, but maybe we need a very low-cost, a low-cost, intelligent little thing that sits between two dumb things to help... to help to make it work. But I'd like people to really engage with it, because I think this is really exciting. I've been one of the very fortunate people who's had Braille displays for 30 years. I've got one that's lasted a number of years, but note takers only last me 2 years. I wear them out.
I think your comment about wanting an automatic refresh on the Braille display and have the display reading is actually symptomatic of the huge problem in front of the designers. There will be some who probably have never and would never use that feature. So... I think that Pete and his team really have their work cut out. And that's a very clear and present example of why Pete wants us to bend our minds to what it is we want in this device. Now, a call to Nigeria?
Ginobi, please, I'm quite illiterate on this thing. I don't know what Kindle is. Can somebody please tell me what it is? Oh, okay.
you can play with mine over the break.
Okay,
there's
thanks.
An offer for you.
So Pete's offered to let Jean see a Kindle. So that's great. Now we have Hanif has received Hanif has received an email from a deafblind listener on the streaming, and I would like to take this listener's question, and Hanif's going to read it for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity. I know that it's not protocol. This is André van Deventer. He's a deafblind user, and he actually is chatting to me currently on Skype, and what he's saying is that I believe that the deafblind community is a very special interest group within the community of Braille users and readers. For us, Braille displays are not a luxury, but a necessity. I do believe that it would be important to find ways of including representation from the deafblind community on Braille issues, especially the development of matters around Braille displays. And he also says thank you very much for the opportunity.
Great. I'm pleased we took that comment. Now, Christo, and then I think it's Christine. We'll take Christo first.
Thank you, Mary. It has always been my understanding that the major factor that made these devices so expensive was the Braille cell, the technology involved in making the pins pop up and go down again. And I had some involvement with the University of Stellenbosch some years ago, 20 years or more ago. They developed a one-cell Braille mouse device called a Libret. It was used for a few years here, but it's gone out of production. The device that you moved like a computer mouse with a sensor at the bottom, and the Braille cell would change as you move along. It was connected to a little box about the size of an opticon that would store your information, and you would read it with this one cell. It was a fairly inexpensive device. Around about 3,500 rand, so that's probably less than 300 euros. But it only had the reason why it was so cheap was because it only had the one cell. Now, if the cost of the cell production can be reduced, I think there could be rather a bit more intelligence in this device, because there's a lot of free software development. I don't think making it more or less intelligent would change much to the price of the thing. I think that the reduction would be in using different technology for the pins.
Bill Jolly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Pete, for a very interesting paper, and a paper that outlining project, a very important initiative that RNIB is taking up. I think, just following on from Christo's comment, I had a one-cell, it was actually a programmable calculator in 1975, the Texas Instruments programmable calculator, and it had a one-cell Braille display with a thumb wheel. So you just flick the wheel around, and then the successive digits and the result of the calculation would appear. And I found that perfectly adequate for reading numbers fluently. It's quite amazing. It was a very clever little device. So one of the things that's I think really important in this project is to think about the aspects of the design of the display, where the number of Braille cells can be optimised, so that we don't necessarily want a whole lot of Braille cells, and that it may be that certainly for some applications quite a small number is sufficient. I think it's very important that we separate out the hardware issues, software issues, and ergonomic issues. That is, whether we can use the device without and have to shift our hands from the dumb display to the other master device where sort of more of the intelligence is, like for example the the electronic reader that we're using it in association with. So some of those ergonomic issues are important. In terms of the software, that's where Moore's Law has been so strong over the years, and the capacity of devices is doubling every 2 years or something like that, and that's been going on for 50 or 60 years. So the incredible developments in terms of the speed and capacity of software. So really, it would seem to me that we need to focus here, particularly on the hardware, to some extent on the ergonomics. The software will, to some extent, they can't take it for granted, take care of itself. And the other thing in terms of keeping the cost down will surely be to minimise the number of the players in the manufacture retail chain. So we often hear stories that a product is sold for $20 a unit, but at the farm gate or whatever they only get 50 cents a unit because the rest of it is all add-ons and markups and so on. So reducing or minimising that chain in the from the manufacturer to the end sale to the end user, I think it will be really critically important. I have seen the draft specification for the project, and like many others, I've seen it, but I haven't responded yet. And I do recognise the importance that we do respond to it. And this, I think that this project is could very well be the focal point for the ICB Refreshable Braille Committee over the next couple of years. Well done, Pete. I look forward to seeing more developments.
Back to you, Pete. Judy Dixon.
No, Pete first.
Just to pick up a couple of quick comments before I forget. With reference to the email from our deafblind colleague who's listening to us through the stream and following us through various messages, I would think as well. I do think it's hugely important that we receive more input from deafblind people. Waiting for the lorry to pass because I can't hear. The requirements that have been put together so far, I don't think fully take account of people who absolutely use Braille as their primary and often only means of accessing information. So I think if people are in that position and they'd like to see the requirements, then please contact me using the email address I gave, and I'll happily provide them because it would be useful to have that input. And comments on the general hardware technology. In terms of the project, I have to be quite careful what I say because some of the projects I've seen were under non-disclosure agreement, as you might expect. But in general terms, I think there's two fields of technology. One which I think is a bit further out, is all around heated polymers and electrically reactive materials and all sorts of things like that, which when some change occurs in that material, they can raise a dot or raise a line. Very interesting stuff, but probably a little space age for where we are now. And I think, although they might deliver a display, I don't think they'll deliver an affordable Braille display at the minute. That's just my own view, having seen them. The other technologies are basically electromechanical in terms of what they're doing and how they work. But, just because we've always been used to a pin either being raised or lowered, so either plus or minus in a sense, that isn't necessarily the only way you could create a Braille cell. There are lots of other ways in which you can mechanically create the cell. And some of the ways in which people are thinking are really quite interesting and innovative, I think. We'll see some of those projects over the coming months. So my own view is that in the near future, some form of electromechanical device is likely. Further out, some kind of polymer-based or material-based, new material-based device is probably likely.
Judy?
Judy Dixon from the United States. I agree with everyone, and I particularly want to comment on the points made by Christo, because I think that the idea of the physiology of the Braille display is going to be critical to making one
lower cost, more affordable, and yet usable. The I'm trying to get the microphone to stop making noises. I also recall the one-cell Braille display, and there's a phenomenon in the physiology of the sense of touch called lateralization. And if you want to experience lateralization, just take your finger and put it straight down on a Braille cell. It can be a piece of paper. And it's very hard to tell what it is. And if the dots of that cell were refreshing under your finger without your finger moving, it's very difficult to tell what it is. I saw a prototype more than 10 years ago developed by a company developed by a university in Germany, where they had a moving carriage that refreshed like an opticon. So your finger moved, but the Braille cells were refreshing across it like an opticon. And it was possible to read 2 or 3 characters at a time. But it was amazing. You could read fast. You could read. As a matter of fact, I suggested maybe they have 2 of them so you could use both your hands. And it as closely as I've ever seen, simulated the experience of taking your 2 hands and running them over a Braille page. And I think we have to stop this 20 cells, 40 cells, 80 cells, 160 cells, 25 lines. I mean, that way lies expense. And big, and cells to fail, and lots of other things. Even if we could afford these things, there's other reasons not to do it that affect everyone. And I think we need to worry more about what is it are we trying to accomplish. The famous Jim Bliss, who I eulogized the other day, obituarized. I'd never heard that word before. Bill, thank you. I every day should add a new vocabulary word. He said one time that any Braille, because the sense of touch is not the same as the sense of vision, any Braille cell that is not under your fingers is a waste of money. And I agree with that. I do agree with that. I think that's the way of the future of refreshable Braille. Thank you.
So I'm going to be killed.
Mike Townsend,
I'm going to slightly disagree with Judy. It's good to have a debate, isn't it? The way we read Braille is very different from person to person. I do not read Braille cell by cell. I read Braille by a shape, the shape of a word, or the shape of a group of words. So I did try the Braille Mate, which was a TSI product, single cell, similar to the one probably that Christo mentioned, but not in a mouse form, and I just could not cope with it. Now, I may have been able to cope with the German one that Judy's mentioned because of the simulation of movement across your fingers, and I think I would need 2. But lateralization is important, but it's also the way you read your Braille, how much of a word you need to feel at once or fairly rapidly before you grasp what the word is. And so I would imagine I can cope with 18 cells. I tried down to 12, the Braille Worm, I think it was. No, maybe that was only 8. 8. I tried the Braille Worm. That didn't really work for me. I've tried the Braille Connect. Yeah, could just about manage. 18 is great for me. However, there's another aspect too. When you're reading a lot, and your fingers are in a position. And Bill's correct. The 3 areas are the hardware, the software, and the ergonomics. I get RSI. If I can't move my finger a bit around, I get RSI. So I get tremendous fatigue after an hour or two reading refreshable Braille. So I think you do need enough cells to be able to just move your finger around. But there's going to be a lot of opinions in this, and I think it's great to have the debate and actually try and get solutions that will really work for us. The European Blind Union, I'm not sure if it's referred to in this paper, but we set out in the 90s a design for a talking book machine, what was required for reading a talking book. I think we've got an opportunity here to advise this project in the same sort of way.
Thanks, Mike. We have a question from Botswana Group.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Joyce Seletso from Botswana. My question is about those learners or people who have intellectual disabilities. I find it very hard to teach someone who is blind and has that other disability. Do you have any technology that can help to teach those learners with intellectual disabilities? I am very much excited to hear that this Braille display is going to be very cheap or affordable for learners who have been in the system for a long time without accessing technology. So I would like to know more about those who have multiple disabilities. Thank you.
Pete, can you respond?
I'm not sure I can respond to that point. I hope there are others more versed in the room. One second.
Okay, it's my turn to try to respond to that one. People with multiple disabilities, particularly with learning disabilities, do need tactile support. And I think it's very important that they have the opportunity to use Braille and refreshable Braille. There are some projects, I think it used to be at the Rushton School in the United Kingdom, which is now the Pears Centre in Coventry, where they do have some tactile feedback devices supported by switches.